It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farid. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a CNN town hall featuring former President Donald Trump raised questions about the right way to cover candidates and misinformation as the presidential campaign kicks off. Our guest says Trump is worth covering, but not like that. First, it's graduation season across Wisconsin, and this year's graduates are the first to have spent the majority of the last 4 years getting their education while navigating a pandemic. There's some good news for new grads in last month's jobs report from the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics. Unemployment for 20 to 24-year-olds fell to the lowest it's been since 1969 here in Wisconsin. On the other hand, some recent high-profile layoffs have added a layer of uncertainty. One survey of college seniors found that nearly all of them are considering alternative employment options, taking a job outside their major, entering into the gig economy, or going on to graduate school. Whether coming out of high school or college, what can new graduates expect here in Wisconsin? We're taking a look at the job market around the state and what people entering the workforce can expect as they launch their careers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a recent graduate or about to graduate, how's your job search going? Are you finding opportunities in your field of study? Or if you're a parent of a new grad, what are you seeing them looking at? Are you hiring people? Are you looking to hire new graduates? Are you having trouble hiring from the current pool out there? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Steve Deller is a UW Extension Community Economic Development Specialist and Professor in Agricultural and Applied Economics at UW-Madison. Steve, welcome back to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
But overall, what does the job market look like right now in Wisconsin compared to, say, the last few years of the pandemic?
Well, I think if you go back a year ago and compare to a year ago, it's softening a little bit. It's still really pretty strong. When you look at unemployment rates and you look at the number of job openings and whatnot, the economy is still doing quite well, but not as well as it was about a year ago. So essentially what we're seeing is the rising interest rates that the Federal Reserve has been putting into place. We're starting to see it tapped down the economy. So are we in a recession? No, not yet. Are we going to go into one? Probably. Will it be a mild recession? Probably. It could be unique in the sense that we are in a formal recession, but the unemployment rate still stays fairly low.
Let's look at the prospects now for those new graduates. Let's start with college grads because they're mostly graduated by this point. What does the job market look like for them right now?
Well, it depends on what kind of occupation that they want to go into. There are certain degrees that the choice of employment is a little bit more limited in terms of what they can do. But there are certain majors like the healthcare sector that is quite robust. The education field, the number of teachers, the teacher shortages. So if you've got a degree in education, a degree in healthcare, even in business still, your job prospect is quite well. Engineering, Wisconsin, we have a shortage of engineers. So if you're coming out with an engineering degree, it looks very, very good. But there are other degrees that maybe it might be a little bit tighter.
Now, say somebody's getting ready to get out of high school right about now. And again, this covers a wide variety of jobs. But big picture, what are prospects looking like?
It depends on what part of the state you're in. And there are some parts of the state that are still doing quite well. Thank you very much. But there are other parts of the state that, selection might be a little bit tougher. It might be that your first job is not your ideal job, but there are jobs out there, particularly if you're willing to commute a little bit. What we're finding over time is that in Wisconsin, and indeed across the Midwest, is folks are willing to commute greater distances for employment. So if you're flexible, I think you won't have a problem finding a job. May not be your ideal job, but you won't have a problem finding a job.
What are some of the hot spots, given that you say that there's some variation across the state there?
Madison is still doing exceptionally well, the Madison area. You go up into the St. Croix area, that's doing very well. The Appleton area is doing very well. Some of the suburbs around Milwaukee are doing very well. So there are parts that are doing well. As I go around the state working with communities, I am still impressed by the number of businesses that have help wanted signs out. So it is, the jobs are there. But again, it may not be your optimal first job out of school, but employment opportunities are there.
Now, this was pre-COVID, but doing site visits in some smaller communities around the state, I've run into people who say, you know, kids who say, I'd love to stay in my hometown. The jobs available after I graduate high school are exactly the same jobs I can get as a high school student. There's not much to keep me here employment-wise. Do we have a lot of communities in that position around the state?
Yes, there is. But again, this is where this notion of commuting is coming into play. Mm-hmm. People are starting to say, look, I want to live in this community, but the job opportunities are, you know, 40 miles that way. And what we're finding is that people are willing to commute that distance. So also a lot of it has to do with kind of the housing market. We're finding that a lot of communities across Wisconsin kind of have come to being worried about the housing market because of labor shortages. People want to move in, take the jobs, but there's no housing. So there's a lot of convoluted, you know, when you start getting, you know, sub-state, looking at individual communities and individual regions, there's a lot of confounding issues.
Now, with a fairly tight labor market, are we seeing kids who maybe 5-10 years ago would have said, I'm going to come out of high school, get a couple years of technical college under my belt, then start my real job search? Are they skipping that step, going right into jobs?
I think that they are. And I also think that you'll see a number of state agencies, for example, are, you know, jobs that had required a bachelor's degree, a college degree, are saying, you know, maybe this job doesn't need that. And they're dropping it down to a high school with experience. And for a lot of occupations, a lot of jobs, that may make perfect sense. So I do think you see a number of folks, young folks, that are thinking, you know, maybe I'll put off that going to technical college. Maybe I'll put off going to the university or to college. I'll put that off and get a job and, you know, save some money for college. A lot of students are really looking at student debt, and they're really thinking about how can they continue their education without going up to their eyeballs in debt.
Talking to Wisconsin economist Steve Deller about job prospects, for this year's season of graduates, college and high school. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you or your family right now? If you're on the market at any level, new graduate or beyond, what are you seeing when it comes to job opportunities? Are you commuting a long way to have the job you want but live in the place you want? And they're not the same thing. And if you're hiring people, love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Steve, what are you watching for now over this next year or so with, as you say, that prospective recession on the horizon? It doesn't sound like you think the bottom's suddenly going to fall out of the employment market here.
No, I don't. And one of the reasons I think this is because there's a lot of businesses that had really struggled with hiring people. And when they finally do get people hired, they're hesitant to let them go. So I think what we're seeing is kind of a decline in the number of new job openings, but yet the rate of people being let go is actually pretty stable. You hear about some of the big companies like Meta, Facebook, mm-hmm. Google, Amazon. You know, they're really big companies that are laying off in the thousands of people. But, you know, they're kind of a unique situation because they overhired coming out of COVID. But your typical business, your typical Main Street business is probably going to want to try to hang out of their workers for as long as they possibly can. And if it's a mild recession, they may come out the other side looking good.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Sandra is with us in Williams Bay. Sandra, hi.
Hi. So my interest is I have a nonprofit, and we offer college scholarships. And this year we were in a situation where we couldn't award a scholarship because the person that we'd like to award it to was not going to college. I was taking a year off to work. So I think that there's probably lots of people in that situation where they have college scholarships to give, but they're taking time off, so we don't know how to really deal with that situation.
Interesting, Sandra. Good luck sorting that out. And Steve, at least one data point there of a student who said, yeah, let's at least hold off on college and take a year to work first.
That's right. Particularly when you're looking at the low unemployment rates right now, you're looking at wages bidding up, and folks are, you know, looking at that price tag of a college education, and they're saying, you know, let's just wait. And I think we're going to be seeing more of that.
Sandra, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Steve Deller, Community Economic Development Specialist and Professor of Agricultural and Applied Economics at UW-Madison, with us today to look at the job market for recent high school and college graduates. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your thoughts, maybe your own experiences. What was the job market like when you graduated? What was your first job out of school at whatever level? How long did that last? And recent and soon-to-be graduates or families thereof, what are you finding with that initial job search? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Steve Deller, Community Economic Development Specialist at UW Extension and a professor in Agricultural and Applied Economics at UW-Madison. We're looking at Wisconsin's job market for new graduates of high school and college, and there's still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. If you are an employer, if you're trying to hire people, what are you looking for from recent graduates? Are you ready to provide training lately where maybe you didn't in the past? Recent graduates, what are you looking for from potential employers? How's the job search going? Everybody else, what's your advice for that new grad as they look for a job? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Steve, we're looking mainly at the beginning of careers for people, but one factor in all of this, I'm looking at labor force participation rates lately, still kind of low despite a tight labor market. And what I'm reading is that's the high end, people retiring maybe a couple of few years earlier than they might have. How big a factor is that? Does it trickle down to those people at the beginning of their job careers?
Oh, it does. I can remember when college graduates that were entering the job market were complaining that the baby boomers weren't retiring and they were holding out of these jobs, and these baby boomers, if they just started retiring, they could get it. Well, guess what? Now they're retiring in droves. And what's happening is it's creating this labor shortage, is that we simply do not have enough workers to replace those that are retiring and stepping out. And so it's good. It's good if you're going into the job market, it's good for you. But from the business side of things, it's actually a problem.
And when we look at Wisconsin's demographics, there's more of those baby boomers leaving in some cases. I think I have this right, Steve, than younger people. Are the age distribution of Wisconsin is getting older?
That's true across the nation, but Wisconsin does tend to be a little bit older. One of the reasons for that is that we don't have a lot of in-migration of younger folks. There's this discussion about the brain drain that we're losing. We're all our educated people are leaving the state. Actually, the amount of out-migration of educated people is about right on par what you would expect. What Wisconsin is lacking is the in-migration of educated people. So that's creating a little bit of a problem.
Let's bring on another caller at 800-642-1234. Michael is with us in West Allis. Michael, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's your story, Michael?
Well, I just actually started working for the city of West Allis, and there's only four of us who initially started, but they were looking to hire at least 20.
Wow.
It feels like, yeah, I know, it's crazy. It feels like they were just looking for more than there is out there. And I've seen a lot of help wanted signs just like you guys have, and there seems like there's a lot more jobs than there are workers. I guess, is there anything that you would suggest to people who don't have jobs, or if they want to upgrade to newer, better paying jobs, what should we do?
Interesting. And Michael, I got to ask, are they working you five times as hard because they only hired four out of 20?
Yeah, I mean, I have we have more than one kind of responsibility under our belt,
gotcha.
At least the four of us there. But it's not as bad as you think. We do as well as we can, and if we don't finish, then we don't finish.
Gotcha, Michael. Thanks a lot for sharing that. And Steve, Michael, looking for thoughts. I think on both sides of the equation for job seekers trying to find those 16 other openings in a place like West Allis. What are your thoughts? Should we be doing our job searching a little differently, given the tight labor market?
I think that a lot of times when companies and local governments are looking for recruitment, sometimes they look in too small of a geographic area. They're looking within inside their own community, and they're really not advertising, and they're not looking outside of the area. And that goes back to this kind of commuting conversation that we had before, is that the labor market is really becoming a much larger geographic area. So when you're recruiting, you don't recruit just in the local community. You recruit from a much larger geographic area.
Michael, thanks a lot for that call. Dave joins us now in Toma. Dave, hi.
Yeah, hi. Well, Wisconsin, you know, we enjoy a very diversified economy here. And I think it's just insane that we talk about getting more people to come here. We're a rural state, and that's why people like it here. And this growth concept is not sustainable.
Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Dave doesn't want to see our economy try to rely on a constantly growing population, it sounds like, Steve.
That is a very legitimate point. Mm-hmm. In my extension work, I work a lot with rural communities across Wisconsin. And you do oftentimes, when you see a big major development proposed, a lot of times you'll see the community kind of split in half. Half of the community is like, hey, these are good paying jobs. And the other half of the community is like, no, this is too much change. And different communities are going to respond to that in different ways. But you're right. A lot of folks have moved to particularly rural Wisconsin, small town Wisconsin, or they remain there because they like that kind of an environment. So the question is how can you have your cake and eat it too? How can you create economic opportunities that make for livable wages, for example, but not necessarily changing the dynamics of the community? There are a lot of communities in rural Wisconsin that want to promote tourism and recreation as an economic growth strategy, but then the next thing they say is they don't want to become the next Wisconsin Dells. Mm-hmm. So how can we have our cake and eat it too? And a lot of rural communities, that's what they're struggling with.
Dave, thanks a lot for that call. And on top of that, Steve, can we maintain the level of infrastructure we want? Can we keep a school open in a community with the population trends in rural areas? How big a problem is that for people who want to maintain that lifestyle?
That's becoming a very serious issue. It's partially it's largely driven by the demographics, is that we're simply not having as many kids as we used to have. And you'll see many of these rural school districts that are really kind of falling below critical threshold. And one of the things that I'm following is a lot of schools have to go to referendum because it's the property tax levy limit that's imposed on them. And in order for a lot of these school districts to make the investments that they need to make, they have to go to the taxpayer. And it's really, I find a pattern that's somewhat bothersome, is that the higher income communities tend to pass these. So you end up with investments in schools and you get better schools, whereas lower income communities tend not to pass them. And the schools start to deteriorate. And it's kind of driving a wedge farther between higher income communities and poorer income communities. And what's driving it a lot of times are the schools.
I want to get back to something you said earlier, Steve, about the cost of housing in communities. Now, we don't have, you know, San Francisco's and Seattle's here in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. but we have communities where housing costs are going up, Dane County for sure, but other places around the state. How are you seeing local governments, local companies try to deal with the need to have a place to live that their workers can afford?
Interesting. There's a community that we're working with now up in the northern part of the state, up in Ashland County. And they have had several failed searches for elementary school teachers because there's no housing. And it is, they're becoming very frustrated. And I can appreciate that. But housing is a unique issue because there's two things that are going on. One is that a lot of the new housing development tends to be high end, and that's because of the cost of materials and the profit margins. Also, a lot of the developers that were building kind of entry level homes, they were wiped out by the Great Recession and they never came back. So the builders that are out there are going after the higher end. The second thing is that some of the housing is of not very good quality. And we have problems with, lack of a better phrase, slumlords. And state policy right now, unfortunately, really ties the hands of what local municipalities can do when you have landlords that are letting their properties deteriorate. So, one, we don't have a good stock of new starter homes. And secondly, a lot of the homes that we do have are not up to par.
And just our last minute or so, Steve, what is the big trend you're watching for the class of, say, 2024?
Oh, that's a long-term perspective. one of the things I think is that we're probably going to see, as I said, a slowdown in the economy. Businesses are probably not going to be laying off folks in droves, but they may not be hiring. So I think we may be seeing an uptick in the number of students that decide that they want to, you know, continue their education, whether it's technical schools or the university system. What I'll be interested in is, you know, what are they studying? What kind of classes are they taking? Are they taking a liberal arts perspective? Or are they kind of trying to get geared up with technical skills for a very technical job? So I'll be interested in see how that kind of plays out.
Steve, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Steve Deller, UW Extension Community Economic Development Specialist and Professor in Agricultural and Applied Economics at UW-Madison. He's with us today to talk about the Wisconsin job market and what recent and soon-to-be graduates can expect. You can keep sharing your stories on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up after the news, CNN caught some flack for the way it handled a town hall event last week with presidential candidate and former president Donald Trump. We'll talk about the media's role and responsibilities when covering the campaign for the White House. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the space race is on for business. We talk about some of the people and ambitions behind a new space race with the author of the new book, When the Heavens Went on Sale. Now, former President Donald Trump participated in a town hall event on CNN last week as he's running for the office again in the 2024 election. The television network received widespread criticism for how the program was handled, with CNN correspondent Caitlin Collins trying to moderate in front of a vocal, largely pro-Trump crowd. The event produced strong ratings for CNN, but it stirred up questions of how journalists and the media should cover Trump and his latest presidential campaign. He's the current Republican frontrunner and can't be ignored, but he often repeats lies and repeats misinformation. He's been indicted on 34 felony counts of falsifying business records. The list goes on. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you watch CNN's town hall event with Trump? What did you think about it? Do you think CNN could have, should have handled it differently? If so, how? How do you think the media should cover Trump in general? And the candidates, the open field for president in general, too. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Tom Nichols is a staff writer at The Atlantic, where he's lead writer for their flagship newsletter called The Daily. He's the author of several books, including Our Own Worst Enemy, The Assault from Within on Modern Democracy. And in last night's episode of the hit HBO show Succession, he played the role of a conservative political commentator on a fictional news network that was covering a presidential election controversy in Wisconsin. Tom, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
In a recent piece you wrote, you have no problem with CNN or anyone covering Trump. You think they should do that. Your problem, though, I think, was with how this town hall format worked. What did you see going wrong there?
Well, from beginning to end, you know, first having a crowd that was clapping and cheering, who was obviously there to treat it like a rally, having a reporter who just was overmatched by Trump. He just swatted her out of the way repeatedly. The whole format was designed to make look Trump like a normal politician, which he most certainly is not. And instead of, you know, sitting him down one-on-one and saying, you really have to answer some difficult questions. You know, you exhorted people to march on the Capitol. You've said, you know, you've been found liable for sexual abuse. And instead, you know, the Caitlin Collins, I think, was stuck in this, you know, no win situation where no matter what she asked him, he was just going to speechify and do what he does. And the crowd was going to clap. So to me, this was just a poorly designed event from beginning to end.
Let's give a listen to Caitlin Collins here asking Trump about the classified documents seized from his Mar-a-Lago home in Florida.
When it comes to your documents, did you ever show those classified documents to anyone?
Not really. I would have the right to. By the way, they were declassified.
What do you mean, not really?
Not that I can think of. Let me just tell you, I have the absolute right to do whatever I want with them. I have the right. I was negotiating with NARA. Do you know what NARA is?
The National Archives.
Extremely,
but you
extremely
don't
left group
with
of
them.
People. Extremely left. And I was negotiating with
they're
them. All of a sudden, they raided my house. They didn't raid the house of Joe Biden. They didn't raid Obama.
But Joe Biden didn't ignore a subpoena to get those documents back like
Joe
you
Biden
did. And
took
so that's
1,850 boxes.
But that's the question that investigators have, I think, is why you held on to those documents when you knew the federal government was seeking them and then had given you a subpoena to return them.
Are you ready? Are you ready? Can I talk?
Yeah, what's
you
the
mind?
Answer?
Do you mind?
I would like for you to answer the question.
Okay, it's very simple to answer.
That's why I asked it.
It's very simple to... You're a nasty person, I'll tell you.
So you don't see a lot of benefit to the democratic process there, Tom?
No, and that didn't come until the very end. I mean, this was finally, you know, her losing patience with him and him losing patience with her. You know, you notice that by the end of that, we've left behind the not... Did you show these to anybody? Not really. You know, you said, did you or didn't you? Did you actually share classified material with other people? It's a yes or no question, Mr. Trump. But, you know, the problem is that you can't fact check him in real time. The truth means nothing to him. And, you know, in that sense, like I said, it was just Caitlin Collins just was in a no-win scenario, especially when the crowd, he's just drawing energy off the crowd. The crowd was there to support him. It was... I had asked CNN about this when I wrote my story on it for The Atlantic, and they said, well, it was Republican primary. You know, these are Republican voters, and we reached out to many organizations. And yet, you know, you've still had people in there who are going to clap and cheer. So I don't know what else they could have. When I say I don't know what they expected to happen, I'm actually worried that this is exactly what they expected to happen, and that because this was completely foreseeable as an outcome.
Talking to Tom Nichols from The Atlantic, looking at media coverage of the presidential election and of former President Trump running for a new nomination after a CNN town hall. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your own thoughts, maybe your own reactions if you watch that town hall. The number is 800-642-1234. Kay is with us now in Madison. Kay, hello.
Hi. I did watch the debate. I guess it was a debate. I thought that Caitlin Collins did a really good job of trying to fact check him, but it was impossible. And I had heard somewhere that they picked a certain amount of people for the audience that were Trump supporters, not just that were Republicans. So that might also account for the fact of the laughter sometimes and the clapping at some of his comments.
Okay, thanks a lot for sharing your thoughts, having seen that. Tom, it seems like there's some gray area in what CNN actually was looking for in establishing who is going to be in the audience. What do we know?
I just couldn't get an answer from that, and I tried twice. I mean, the CNN, their spokesperson went on Twitter and basically said, you know, here's how we did it. And again, the answer was kind of this general, well, we reached out to a lot of organizations, including the New Hampshire GOP. So, you know, but in the end, if the audience wasn't instructed to please be quiet, you know, while people were asking questions or while Collins was talking, you weren't, it just wasn't going to happen. I think having a town hall format, for one thing, you know, this early, is just a mistake. There's nothing anybody, there's nothing about Donald Trump that people don't know already. And Trump does not look at these as opportunities to explain his positions on anything. He looks at them as opportunities to make great TV. And apparently, I mean, it looks like that's what CNN wanted to do, was to make news and make great TV. But I don't think the public interest was served by pushing Caitlin Collins out there to try to fact check a guy who just doesn't bother with truth or reality.
Thanks for that call, Kay, at 800-642-1234. Tom, you know, when we do Wisconsin election coverage here, we'll look at a race, we'll establish a threshold, determine which candidates meet that. It might be ballot status or polling or whatever, varies from year to year. Would you feel better about this if CNN had said, okay, we'll invite Nikki Haley or certain other declared candidates who meet some kind of standard, so it's not just having one particular candidate on?
Well, my beef isn't with having any one candidate. It's the format that, you know, basically legitimizes and normalizes Trump's behavior. And I think that the only reason they went that road, I shouldn't say the only reason, I think an important reason they probably went that road is because Donald Trump was not going to agree to any other format. If they had said, look, we're going to sit you down one-on-one with a, you know, venerable older journalist who's an experienced interviewing hand, Trump probably would have said, well, I'm not doing it. You know, he's already said, I don't want to debate. You know, he wants to do rallies and he wants to do TV, and CNN said, okay. And they basically let him control the environment in a way I think you would not have seen, you know, some other candidate be able to do and demand. So it's not that they shouldn't talk to Trump or that they should or should not talk to Nikki Haley or Asa Hutchinson or anybody else. It's that this, the design of this event foreordained that it was going to become, you know, a circus, which is exactly what happened.
I think that it seems like there's a media instinct to say, okay, this is a legitimate candidate. We'll talk to him in this case, like we would any other a candidate. Going back to 2015, now through 2023, can you make the case to media people that he's unique enough that we, I guess, in the media need to be careful how we approach that?
He's the first president to defeat the peaceful transfer of power in American history. We transferred power from one party to another, but it was not peaceful. And he stood there and, in my view, incited it. So, no, he's not a typical candidate. You know, he is, he basically instigated an attack and encouraged people, and now threatens to pardon those same people who are in jail for that attack. An attack on the government and the Constitution of the United States. So no, you can't just cover him as if to say, well, you know, here's this guy who advocated violent sedition and has been held liable for sexual abuse. So now we're going to ask him what his debt policies are. That to me seems, you know, a dereliction of duty almost, to say, well, we asked him and he wouldn't answer us. So now we're going to move on to what he would do with, you know, Ukraine and immigration and the deficit. Donald Trump doesn't care about policies. Donald Trump is trying to seize control of the government again for his own purposes. And I think to cover him any other way, I understand. I mean, this is a really tricky thing for journalists who, you know, can't become advocates of candidates, but to treat Donald Trump as if the past 5 years just didn't happen, I think is really dangerous for a democracy.
We're talking to writer Tom Nichols from The Atlantic about Donald Trump's town hall event on CNN last week and the way the media covers the former president now running for the White House again. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think the media's responsibility should be when it comes to covering the former president and his new campaign? What do you want for your media coverage of that campaign? Do you think there should be more scrutiny, more fact-checking? And what do you think of that CNN town hall, the format? What would you like to see instead? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Tom Nichols, staff writer for The Atlantic, where he wrote a recent column on CNN's town hall event with former President Donald Trump, current presidential candidate, with us today to talk about how the media should cover Trump amid a criminal indictment, a civil sexual abuse verdict, and another run for president. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. How do you think the media should cover Trump? What does fair coverage look like to you for a candidate like Trump? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. And did you see the CNN town hall style event with the former president? What did you think about that? What could have worked better? Call in at 800-642-1234. Tom, one of the arguments from CNN about having Trump supporters in the crowd was, hey, these are real people, real voters. They should be represented on the media, including at an event with the former president.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty unconvincing from the head of CNN, who said, well, you know, these people have been ignored. That's just a laughable argument, considering how many times, as I said in the piece, how many times journalists have, you know, headed out to every diner and gas station in America to find some angry guy in a red hat and beg him, please tell us what you're mad about. Please, you know, explain why you're voting this way. I mean, this is actually one of the most studied parts of the electorate over the past 5 years. The minute Trump won, there were endless stories and academic studies as well of, you know, who are these voters and what do they want? And for CNN to say, well, you know, we really had to reach out to these folks because nobody pays attention to them, struck me as just laughable. And you'll notice that not something that's done with any other candidate. Nobody crisscrossed the country saying, we have to find these, you know, we have to find these Biden voters and find out why they're voting for Joe Biden, you know, what they want. This was something very specifically done with the Make America Great voters. And I thought that was just at best kind of risible and at worst kind of disingenuous about why they were stalking the audience, if they actually stalked the audience. But the idea that they were reaching out and saying, well, we have to talk to people who've been ignored. All we've been doing for 5 years is talking to people who voted for Trump and why they did it.
And if that Trump voter were out there listening right now, they might hear this conversation as a call for bias against their candidate. They might sense that the media was against Trump and his supporters already, and it might sound to them like you're calling for special rules targeting their candidate. What would you say to them?
I actually think that their candidate should be interviewed, but you can't let him slide when you ask a question like, will you accept the outcome of an election? And Caitlin Collins tried, and he said, if I think it's fair. Well, you know, what does that mean? Do you, I was a federal employee before I became a writer, I was a federal employee for 25 years. You know, I've sworn an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, which is the same oath the president swears. You know, will you support and defend the Constitution of the United States? Because on January 6th, 2021, you did not. So what, you know, what can you say to reassure people that you will not attack the Constitution of the United States again? Now, if people hearing that think that that's a call for special treatment, I'm sorry, I can't help you. I think that if a person running to become yet again the commander in chief and the chief magistrate of the United States, to become the head of our Article II power in the Constitution, has to be held accountable for the anti-constitutional things that he did for 4 years. And simply gliding past it to say, well, you know, bygones, let's talk about the deficit, I think is just irresponsible. And I think it's irresponsible, an irresponsible way to interview him. But I also think it's irresponsible if people say, you know, move on, move along, in a way that I think those voters, Rob, I'll just add, I think a lot of those voters would not be that willing to move along if a Democratic candidate were found liable for sexual abuse or had said that he might not accept the outcome of an election and had been involved in some pretty dodgy stuff regarding things like the military and other institutions of the U.S. government. So if anything, I think what I'm calling for is fairer treatment and to stop treating Donald Trump like a child who will have a tantrum if you ask him hard questions.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Joni is with us in Appleton. Joni, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Joni?
Well, I've been listening. I'm parked. I'm not driving, but I was driving along. I'm listening to this, and the thing that has always been extremely upsetting to me is how much free coverage Trump has always gotten from the media. They chase after him like he's gold or something. And I know that it's all revenue to be on the air, to have something that people are interested in. But just as your previous caller was saying, he's gotten away with so many things with the charges against him, and now he's been found liable for sexual abuse. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. He got so much free coverage when he was running against Hillary because the media chased after him. So, and I really do think it was a disservice for CNN to cover him the way they did. It was just a free-for-all for him. I don't think that he should be covered unless he's going to be legitimately challenged with another debate or something similar, because he's just always got free rein. And it's so much disinformation. And the people that listen to it at the time don't go back and fact check. And then so many people, unfortunately, aren't interested in the real facts.
I gotcha, Joni. Thanks a lot for calling in at 800-642-1234. Joni, pointing Tom toward, I think, going back to the early, even the Republican primary, where CNN, among others, gave a lot of free airtime to candidate Donald Trump.
Yeah, and he knew. I mean, the one thing Trump is really good at, I think he's one of the least intelligent people ever to hold the presidency, but he's very clever about marketing. And he knew how to get himself on television. And, you know, the problem is that once you've captured the camera, and I think your caller, I think Joni was absolutely right, you know, once he starts saying crazy things and false things, they're out there. They're, you know, it's hard, you know, the saying, right? A lie gets halfway around the world before the truth gets its pants on. And he knew that. And so there has really been no penalty for him to do that. I think if it makes folks feel any better about this, I think one of the reasons he lost in 2020 was that people got a really good look at him in those crazy press conferences that he was running every afternoon during COVID. Where, you know, he finally started talking about, you know, injecting bleach and, you know, sticking, you know, UV light in your body and all of that. But I think that your caller is absolutely right. Doing it the way CNN did it was really the worst of all possible worlds, because it made him look like an ordinary candidate with some unusual opinions. He is not an ordinary candidate. He is someone who has been involved with and is offering to pardon people who committed sedition.
Joni, thanks a lot for that call. Tom, in our last minute or so, I want to talk about disinformation in the 2020 election. People still repeating claims about fraud that we knew were fake in November of 2020. How do you want to see the media tackle that, given that, you know, it's all been disproven, it's all been corrected, and it still keeps going out there from Trump and others?
Yeah, I'm not sure what to do about that. I mean, I was kind of hoping that, you know, Caitlin Collins was not going to move off of that issue, that, you know, the 2020 election was not falsified. And until Donald Trump is simply going to accept that, you know, there's no point in moving on with the conversation. I think part of the problem here is that one of the reasons it's so difficult to break through the fact-checking wall is that people, I think a lot of people who support Trump don't care about the facts. They believe what they believe. And if they, you know, they'll go to Facebook or they'll go to YouTube or they'll go to some other outlet. And we've seen this now with Fox, right? I mean, Fox has had to back up from the accusations it made. And a lot of Fox viewers said, fine, if you're not going to feed me what I want, then I'm going to go find it somewhere else. So Trump knows that. And I think journalists have to go in when talking to him, knowing that as well.
Tom, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Tom Nichols is a staff writer at The Atlantic, where he's lead writer for their flagship newsletter called The Daily. He was with us today to talk about how the media should cover Donald Trump, misinformation, and potential threats to democracy. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, a rare plant was spotted in Wisconsin for the first time in decades. Check out that discovery and the wider search for elusive species here in the state. That's tomorrow morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. In just a few minutes, we'll hear about a space race between private companies trying to develop technologies in Earth's orbit and beyond. But here's another space race between two planets to see which one has the most moons in our solar system. As reported in the New York Times science section, the contenders are Jupiter and Saturn. No surprise, they're the biggest. Why shouldn't they have more moons? Recent counts had Jupiter at 95 moons, Saturn at 83, but hang on. New research found a bunch more moons around Saturn, and the International Astronomical Union is planning to add 62 new Saturn moons to the list, pulling it way ahead of Jupiter. Now, dial down your expectations of moons. These guys are like 1 or 2 miles long. They're shaped like potatoes. Is that really a moon? I don't get to decide. They could be the remains of larger moons that broke up for some reason. Now, here on Earth, we're still holding steady at 1, but it's a pretty good moon. Moon news you can use. This is Central Time.